welcome to episode 18 of this season's Jerry Jam. Again, Gloucester unfortunately managed to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory at the weekend against Bath. We'll come on to that later. But before then, we're going to have got a quite a busy show, actually. We've got a couple of things about signings and people leaving the club. Today, as we record on a Wednesday, Gloucester have been confirmed in the last 16 of the Champions Cup. A little bit about the Lance Bradley interview with Shedweb. We'll review the Bath game. We'll talk about the Worcester game at the weekend and the England-Wales game. And we will start off with the news this week that Willie Hines will be leaving Gloucester at the end of the season to join Worcester, apparently on a 3-year deal. What do we all think of it? I mean, personally, I'm a bit disappointed because I think he is one of our best players, but at the same time, he's 35. Well, he's about to turn 35, and we're trying to balance the squad, which we'll talk about a little bit more in a bit, but we're trying to balance the squad a little bit, aren't we? And maybe the books.
You go first then, Ed.
Before you do, still, you turn around, mate. You might well turn around.
It's a dog on a table. It's all right. It's his dog.
Yeah, Snowy's dog is climbing on the table to eat something. There we go. Right. I will start. So I'll start first then quickly. So Willie Hines leaving Gloucester. I am disappointed. I've seen the arguments that he's at the sort of towards the end of his career, but the experience that he's got would suggest that it would be a better, and particularly when he's apparently moving to Worcester with one of the years is going to be a coaching role. It is disappointing that we couldn't hang on to him. But at the same time, as Jim alluded to, we do need to balance the books a bit. If we're offering him X for 2 years and Worcester are offering him Y, and Y is more than X for 3 years, of which one of those years he's going to be more coaching than playing, when you've got 3-4 young scrum halves at the club, it does seem sensible to maybe say thanks and good luck at the Warriors. But what do you guys think?
I think we've desperately needed him this season. Mm. Just because he's got that... We've lacked a cool head, and 9-10's been so... like swapped about a lot, hasn't it? I don't know how many nines we've had play for us this season. 4 or 5?
5, I think, yeah.
We since Cipriani's left, we haven't got a fly half really, but with injuries, and obviously 12 years have started their last couple of weeks. So when he came back into the team, suddenly we looked like we had a bit more brains about us. I think it's been critical that he's been there. That being said, next season we've got Hastings coming in. I think he'll control the game a lot more from 10, try and dictate the way the game flows, and then that gives a little bit more freedom to the nine because Hines is an out-and-out leader, and we are lacking some leadership in that area for sure.
It's certainly Hastings will certainly take the pressure off of our younger scrum halves when they play. From a personal point of view, of mixed emotions. You can see why he's going. It's just disappointing that he's going. But I don't want to get into picking the bones too much out of it because we don't know what the Gloucester offer is ultimately. And with, as Jim said about balancing the books, and Ed, you mentioned disappointed with the coaching role. I don't think we got space for any more coaches at the moment, to be honest with you, because we've got a backs coach and then we got Tim Taylor as well. So I'd imagine that Willie would be a specific, I don't know, the only role I could think of him being at ours is a scrum half coach, and I don't know if we're going to go down that, if we got the money to afford a luxury like that, so I can see why he's going.
Yeah, I mean to be fair, I think probably more the fact that it's a shame we're losing the experience. I agree with you, Loz, that there isn't really room for him coming from a coaching point of view, but it's a shame you're losing all that experience in Nouse. Jim?
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree with all that. I think maybe if George felt that he would fit into the Gloucester coaching setup, they might have thought about offering that sort of position. Whether those positions are already filled or whether George just doesn't see him as part of that, he doesn't see that as being a quality of his yet, or not those aren't the skills that he wants in his team. Mm. As I'm sure we'll come on to, one thing that Lance was saying in his interview was all about George building his coaching team and his squad. And, you know, if he doesn't fit in that, then got to have a bit of faith. We've got some very, very good young nines. And I just hope that that they're around Willie for the neck, you know, for the rest of this season, and can just absorb as much of his knowledge as possible, so that they're as strong as they possibly can be going into next season. Because I think they could be very, very good, and obviously a player of Willie's skills and experience leaving is going to leave a little bit of a hole, which hopefully they will very quickly fill.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing I would say is we've got a player in Varney now who's definitely stepped up. And his experience, his international experience, that even only at the age of 19, he'll be 20 next season. It's going to be invaluable. It sounds like he's going to be our number one scrum half. Joe Simpson's probably going to be the deputy when Varney's away on international duty. That's probably the idea. And then you've got people like Chapman and Venner, who I think realistically, Chapman unfortunately seems to have a combination of injuries and maybe other players playing into form has struggled a little bit this season. But, you know, he's undoubtedly talented and was looking the real deal last season. So there's opportunities for these guys to step up and make a big difference. And as Snowy said, the Hastings, I am genuinely excited with Hastings coming in. Hopefully he can take, as Loz agreed and said, that he takes a bit of pressure off those young nines. But particularly Varney, I mean, you know, there aren't many 19-year-olds playing international rugby on a regular basis. So it's good that he's one of Gloucester's. The good news this week, though, was that Geordie Reid has signed a new contract, extended his deal, which I think we're all very happy with. He's a player that's done remarkably well and stepped up almost seamlessly into the Premiership from Ealing in the Championship. Any sort of other comments on that, really, guys?
No, I just think that's great news. Really, really good. He's been the one kind of shining light, really. I mean, we've had all our back rows have done pretty well. I think Ludlow's, you know, played like a good captain, just giving his all every match. And we've had a few others that have done well, but he has shone a little bit, just with his effort, and clearly looks to be enjoying his rugby. I mean, it's always nice. There's been a few other re-sign-ins over the last couple of days. It's nice that these players are clearly enjoying their time at Gloucester enough to put pen to paper and be willing to continue, even with our poor win rate at the minute. I wouldn't say our game has been horrendous all the time.
No.
Unfortunately, the results have been horrendous all the time. But I think that's great, really great news, and I'm sure he'll improve as well. That's the great thing. He's young enough, and he's stepped up to the Premiership from the Championship, and he's going to be improving hopefully the rest of this season and into next.
The vibes from the change room are actually quite positive, aren't they? Like often when a team end up at the bottom of the table, you hear a lot about infighting and players falling out, and then lots of players leaving, and that doesn't seem to be the case in this scenario. It seems like most of what we're hearing is quite positive from the changing room. That's one positive from our position, Lancashire bottom of the table.
You're right. They do seem to be getting behind George and going, yeah, there's only a couple of little things that we need to tweak and then it will click. And I'm guessing they know better than us, really, you know, whether things are happy. You want a happy back room, don't you?
Well, no matter how much you try and keep it in, if there's things that aren't happy, they get out. It's happened through our club whenever something rumoured to not be happy. And then next thing you know, there's been a change in whomever. So it would get out and you're not hearing anything, whether it's a reliable source or an unreliable source. There's just nothing coming from that. One thing I do know, when I see, based on what Ed said in the past about the communal tweet, when things have been said about certain people, I then go digging through the rugby players to see if anyone else has tweeted something very, very similar. And to be honest with you, I'm not seeing that. It seems to be quite individual what's being tweeted by the players at the moment, which is another sign of things being quite good, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And actually, to be fair, today, as we record, another player, and I think he deserves a mention, is Henry Walker signed a new contract. And we gave him a bit of stick a couple of weeks ago, mainly not for his sort of all-round play, but it was just there were a few lineouts going awry, weren't there? And to be fair to him, apart from the first lineout against Bath, he had a really good game against Bath. I thought he was, you know, again, it probably helps having Ed Slater back. And let's be honest, I think that that's probably a big part of where the lineout was going wrong. But I thought he had a good game, not just in the lineout, but generally, I thought he was well. I think it's important that, you know, and we said that we hoped he would bounce back, and he definitely did.
Yeah, very much so. I've been not questioning such, but I have wondered to myself whether he perhaps was going to be the player that the prospect that he seemed to be with the England under 20s, etc. Mm. And I was worried that he might not be, but he did show that he could probably hack it at this level, if not more. Against Bath, and if you can remembering he's still only young as well, which is always encouraging. I think young players, when they put the odd good performance in and a few poor ones, you don't get too worried about it. I think it's when you get older and they start putting the poor performances in, you start to worry more, because there's always that learning, especially in the front row, that room to learn. And he certainly, if he plays like that every week, we'll have a good player on our hands.
Yeah, agree with that. Also, again, a player that hasn't, I think he might have re-signed quite recently, but Alex Seville, I thought, again, did a really good job on...
very good.
On Saturday, on Friday night. And again, you know, I mean, look, I have no way of determining whether someone's a good prop or not. You know, I kind of guess a lot of the time. But it seemed that when he was on... when he played on Friday night, our scrum was really stable. He did a job on a forward, didn't he, the week before? On a couple of occasions. So, you know, again, there is positivity there, and there are signs of positivity. We'll come on to it in a bit more the second part of the pod. But
well, for me, as someone who's played in the forwards, or admittedly not the front row, for me, a good prop is someone who can scrummage well, and then anything else on top of that is a bonus. I appreciate that the professional game at the top end requires you to do far more than that. But if you can lift in the line out adequately, you can scrummage well, and you can tackle, then you are going to be what we need in our team. And if you can then do passes as well and whatnot, then, yeah, that's even good, even better. Mm. But ultimately, if you can't scrummage, then you shouldn't be playing prop, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, agreed. We'll move on now to the sort of a couple of mini little bits before we sort of then... go to the second part of the pod. The first one of these is, it was announced today by EPCR that the Champions Cup and the Challenge Cup are going to be reworked again, mainly because COVID has meant that the group games are now impossible to schedule in. So it basically, Gloucester, by two of the last minute try by George Barton against Ulster to win it with a 5-point win, Gloucester have snuck into the last 16, which is remarkable, really. And
it's all we deserve.
It's all, yeah, quite, yeah. We basically put a third string side out against Lyon and gave up, and then pulled off our only one of two victories this season, and we're in the last 16 of the Champions Cup. Loz, go on, mate.
It's rather ironic, because it was COVID that got us in there, into the Champions Cup in the first place. COVID's buggering, it seems to be buggering up our domestic season, but in Europe, it's helped us out massively, because A,
got us through to the knockouts,
been cancelled, and B, there were teams couldn't play because of COVID. But that's why our result against Ulster snuck us into the top eight of the group.
It is ridiculous. And I did tweet out, or we tweeted out earlier on our jam underscore rugby Twitter account, our Cherry Jam Twitter account, it looks like, so basically the way it works is that there's the top eight from both the pools will go through. Certain teams are guaranteed a home fixture, Now, they are Racing, Leinster, Bordeaux and Munster, because apparently they won both their games without COVID interfering. Yeah. Then in addition to that, Gloucester then will not play any member, won't play a team from their league. So we won't play any other English team. So we could be drawn against Racing, Leinster, Bordeaux or Munster away. But we could also play home or away, depending on how it's drawn. Scarlets, Edinburgh, Toulon, Lyon again, Clermont, La Rochelle or Toulouse. Now, there are clear teams.
Edinburgh at home, we got to fight for ourselves.
I was going to say that there's five teams there I don't want us to play.
there's a few more than that.
Well, let's just assume that the four games away, the Racing, Leinster, Bordeaux, and Munster, look, you know, that's a gimme. That's a bit beyond us. But you never know. I mean, Scarlets or Edinburgh at home. I don't know. I'd fancy we'd give them a game, but the other four French teams, you'd struggle. Let's be honest.
Is it 10 games now we haven't won in, or 9?
I think it's 9, Snowy.
9. Yeah.
Am I right in thinking this is a one-off game and not
it's
a home
one-off
and away?
Game. Yeah, they're not. It's not home and away. It's a one-off game. It's all one-off games now, apparently. But let's be honest, realistically, our best chance is a nice COVID bye. That would be...
No, we'll save that for the next round. So if we beat Edinburgh at home...
Yeah.
And then we get Racing away, COVID bye.
Mm-hmm.
Racing are out.
Yeah.
And then in one
semi-final.
Of the other, in one of the other quarters, there's another... Like Leinster have a COVID or something. You know, we could end up... We could... play the final against Scarlets
or La Rochelle.
Did you see the stats at home and away this season? Is the least it's ever mattered, in, which is not surprising, really, but it is basically 50-50 chance of winning home and away.
I'm going to put it on the line now. Unless you're playing a King's Own. My hair growing back than it being Gloucester versus Scarlets in the final of the Champions League.
I reckon you get good odds, Loz.
Well, apparently, we're 250-1.
Worth a pound.
Ooh, worth a pound, yeah.
Which, exactly. of 16 teams, and we're 250-1. That is long odds.
Who's that with, Ed? Because I will put £2 on that.
I don't know. I don't promote gambling, but I'm aware that it is on many bookie sites, 250-1, apparently. Right, so let's be honest. It's good that we're in the next round of the Cup. I don't think we're going to get much further, realistically, the way we're playing at the moment. Barring some horrific injuries to the Welsh, Scottish or French sides, I think it's unlikely. Right, the final bit of this part of the pod is about an interview that Lance Bradley did with Shedweb about a week ago. I think it was Thursday night, wasn't it? It was just before the Bath game. And I watched all of it. I know Jim watched it. I think Loz and Snowy have seen the summary. I don't think they've actually watched it. But the main takeaways were, for me, one, as we've mentioned already, that the positivity around the squad towards George Skivington, which is, in a way, is good. I have a caveat for that, and I'll come back to that. There's the training ground has suddenly resurfaced and apparently is going to be signed off at the end of this month or beginning of next month. According to Lance Bradley, will be in the training ground and facility by the beginning of next season, which suggests it's an existing facility which we're going to add to.
Yeah, September's not long away.
No. The final bit was related to the squad, as Jim referred to, and about how we want to basically allow George to form his own squad, giving him the time to create his own squad, and the fact that we've got a very unbalanced squad. So we've got a lot of players who are sort of 32 plus, 30 plus. We've got a lot of players who are very young. We haven't got many players in the middle. And maybe that Willie Hines, depending whether he offered anything substantial or not, but, you know, Willie Hines is towards that. So I think he is the oldest player in the squad. So there's a few bits to pick out there. We'll start with the training ground. I have a theory where it is now, just because of the short term nature of the fact that it's been done quite quickly. And my theory is that he probably will be at Cheltenham near Bishop's Cleeve.
Cheltenham Tigers.
Yeah, that's my theory on the basis
That's what I heard. That's what I heard a while ago.
Yeah.
GE Aviation, massive site. A lot of it's dormant. Would be quite easy to. They've got a lot of land, a lot of grass, a lot of buildings. You could convert one and have some pitches.
You would have thought that.
There's a 3G pitch opposite, you know, at Cheltenham Tigers. So whether they get to use that, that would kind of tie in. That's an RFU-funded pitch.
That land's pretty expensive there, you would have thought, wouldn't you? Because there's the Tigers ground itself, and they have got a lot of sort of walking and wasteland around it. But you would have thought that would be sort of really prime real estate land cost.
No, I think
it depends whether you can get planning permission on something like that. Land without planning permission is not expensive, and also the other thing at the moment as well is whether they want that green belt between Bishop's Cleeve and Cheltenham and Walden Cup.
But it's also very visible, and you'd think they'd want it a bit away.
Yeah, that was my only.
Have you seen us play this year? I don't think it makes any difference whether anyone sees us train or not.
So you're thinking maybe that bit of grass they've got in the middle of the GCHQ donut, that would be good because.
I thought for a while, because there was some very ridiculous suggestions that were put on ShedWeb and other sites about where it could possibly be. The fact that the majority of the players live in and around Cheltenham, that's number one. That makes sense. You want to make sure you cut down on them travelling across town and all the rest of it. You want to be on the doorstep. And I know Gloucester to Cheltenham's not very far, but still. The only other place I did think it possibly could be was the old Doughty site. Because that is a large site. It has a small facility, but it is well away from prying eyes. But I get the feeling the way that it's been kind of done so quickly. I think as Jim's mentioned, there's new facilities being added for Tigers quite recently, relatively recently.
It's not a lot. There's not a lot there, though.
No.
You'd think Prince of Wales has got more.
Mm. But then
and they've got multiple pitches.
Yeah, but then I suppose the argument being that I suppose it's whether the club can afford to, you know, they're going to be building facilities that are going to be owned and operated by Gloucester, unlike at Hartbury where it's kind of shared and really owned by often mainly owned by Hartbury, wasn't it? Gloucester kind of assisted and used a lot of the facilities. They didn't own.
Are there any sites which have already got well draining pitches? 3G pitches and floodlights in place already. It sounds like that's probably what's going to be one of those sites.
Oxtors would be my guess for that.
But Oxtors is a flood, is just an absolute flood nightmare, though, isn't it?
No, the university.
Oh, the university. Oh, yeah, true. I think there was talk about them actually using the university pitches anyway, wasn't there?
Yeah. What was the cricket pitch, haven't they?
And they've got really good physio facilities and all that stuff there, like all the core things that you need.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of interesting.
How much are they planning on sort of building from scratch, and how much are they suggesting is already there for
the purpose? That wasn't really alluded to, and one of the frustrations about the interview was there was a few things I thought you could have really probed a little bit deeper on.
That
needed another question. In terms of not necessarily knowing exactly where it was, but would it be a case of adding to existing facilities or building from scratch? That is exactly what I would have probably asked, but we'll find out soon enough.
You get it next time, Ed.
Yeah, I'll get it next time.
I can't imagine that we're going to go from having a really successful relationship with Hartbury College and not and wanting to leave because we wanted something of our own, and then go to Oxtors where you can't help but have a relationship with Gloucestershire University, which surely would be an identical, if not very, very similar kind of setup, because the 3G pitch there and the wonderful new arena that they've got there, if it's not being used all the time by the university, then yes, it would be great, for Gloucester to use, but they wouldn't have first dibs, would they? Because it's not theirs, which is exactly what they want.
Yeah.
So clearly they're going to build their own thing.
Because with Tigers, the only way I could see them moving to Tigers is if Tigers went back to the Prince of Wales, because those pitches are always in use. They've got youth teams, their latest team are really successful. they're not just going to be able to take that over unless they were moving Cheltenham Tigers.
The only other thing is, are we missing just up the road from the university, where it, because there's the old Oxford school site, which they could be going in with, go on to develop that. And I know there's going to be quite a lot of work, but then use the university in the meantime for maybe, I know you said we'll be in it by in a year, but just sort of a half and half sort of base. I know the pitches aren't very clever at Oxford.
The other thing I wonder, you know, they're doing the big new development up from GCHQ, and there's going to be, I think there's a new school there and loads of houses and big leisure facilities and everything developed there. I wonder if they've tied in that deal somehow, and then financially that can make sense if it's something that the council want to develop as part of that overall programme. And you know, it's halfway between Cheltenham and Gloucester.
We haven't got a bloody clue, have we?
No, we haven't got a clue. No. But what's interesting, though,
is there some land?
Yeah, well, the interesting thing on this is that, so, no one is, what is remarkable, and we kind of mentioned this slightly before, was there aren't any leaks. Like, Jim's kind of heard on the grapevine, it might be Tigers, but...
But that was over a year ago, I probably heard that.
Also, I know why you heard that. It's because it was that guy off... Gloucester Rugby Is My Home, who said Cheltenham Tigers are making an announcement today.
And it was
a big, here we go. And it was
Cheltenham Tigers ladies.
Yeah, it's Cheltenham Tigers ladies had announced they were going to play their cup semi-final at home or something, wasn't it? It was nothing to do with Gloucester whatsoever.
No, exactly. the other bit which I did want to quickly touch on before we move on to the Bath game and all the rest of it. And it was a comment that Lance made about the fact that, and we kind of made the point as well about how everyone is behind George and it's really good atmosphere and all of this stuff. The only caveat, and I'm being very cynical here, is professional sportsmen like it easy. And if you've got a person who everyone gets on with and everyone thinks is really great and we all love it and we love the culture and we love everything, and we're losing every week, Is it that it's just a little bit too nice?
Yeah, it could be. If you're not getting bollocked and you're getting paid, but everyone wants a job where they only have to do 2 hours work a day without any stress and hassle.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be fair,
that doesn't necessarily lead to results, does it?
No, and that's my only little.
I agree completely.
Down.
Yeah, worries me a little bit.
When you go to the players and say, who's the one you want us to coach us? I think you're not really, I don't know, it's difficult to say.
That's the attitude. I think before the Bath game, I would have said that's the attitude that's come across in the last few games. It's like they seem a bit too happy for the position and the style of rugby that they're playing. But that being said, against Bath, without jumping ahead to the review of that game, that they did all seem to be really working together, pulling together, communication was... up there, work ethic was up there, so that does sort of, okay, the quality was still pretty poor, but that at least says something, doesn't it, about the sort of the group buy into whatever plan there may or may not be.
Jim, you were about to say something and I kind of interrupted you, sorry, go on.
Well, no, I'm just agreeing really that it's much, and unless you are getting results from absolutely beasting yourself on the training pitch and on the pitch, if you're working incredibly hard and coming third and fourth, then actually would you rather be having an easy life and coming tenth? Or, you know, and unless you've had a taste of victory and you've won premierships and Heineken Cups, will you? I think it's quite hard to you know, train at that level to continue to get it. And like you were saying, it's if it's just a job and you're getting paid a good whack for turning up and having a couple of hours training and then playing your game at the weekend, and you lose and you go, you know, sometimes you can see, you know, at the end of a game when the guys are not shaking hands because you're not allowed to, but they're just sort of saying their hellos. And it's all smiles. And I'm like, that grates me a little bit, because I know how I'm feeling as a supporter when Gloucester lose.
Yes.
And I'd be more than happy to shake my opponent's hand, but I wouldn't be doing it with a smile on my face.
No, I mean, I don't think there's I get that, and there's been a few comments I've seen about everyone's looking quite happy and all the rest of it. Even Mike Tyndall mentioned it, the fact that a lot of that is, you know, it's niceties, and it can be masking an emotion, the deeper emotion and the rest of it. I don't read too much into players being happy and smiley at the end of the game. I mean, that's what rugby's supposed to be about anyway, isn't it, really?
That's true.
I suppose, yes, it would be lovely if they were, I mean, you know, would we think if they were in tears crying all the time, would that be acceptable? I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting question. But it was one of those things. I just thought to myself, I'm just being too cynical about it. And actually, we've got to just treat it as it is. Look, we're going to get a free hit this year. Hopefully the buy-in, as it's been mentioned a few times, and the culture within the club, and the fact that they really are, they understand the process, and it's just small tweaks and all the rest of it. You just hope eventually in the next couple of weeks, particularly, it does turn around for them. They do get an opportunity to show how good they are, and they can start getting these wins, because we're going to come on to it now. We were very close again at the weekend. And we'll come back and we'll talk about the Gloucester Bath game and then the Gloucester Worcester game coming up. Okay, right, we're going to talk about the Gloucester Bath game now. Gloucester were down to 14 men after, was it 8 minutes? 8-9 minutes, wasn't it? Yeah, something like that.
Not long.
Val Rapava-Ruskin, in hindsight, you know, and despite our rage at the time, it was a red. And we'll
that,
come
that
on.
That arm has got to be tucked into the body, hasn't it?
Or carrying the ball. I don't know. Anyway, but yeah. So Gloucester were down to 14 men. And going into half-time with about 30 seconds left, looked like they were going to lead 6-0. Had a really good 40 minutes. Unfortunately, combination of running out of players and a few missed tackles meant that Bath scored a quite a well-worked try, to be fair to him, in the corner by Faletau. And then second half, with about 3 minutes to go, Gloucester go into the lead with a try by Lewis Ludlow. Again, really well-worked. Bath are down to 13 men because Jonathan Joseph decided to deliberately knock the ball on and then give either the referee or one of the Gloucester players the bird afterwards, if you do watch that back.
Ooh.
Yeah. But unfortunately, a mistake by Chris Harris, and I'm not blaming him at all because that's what you do. You hit the guy on the outside. Meant there was a tackle off the ball, penalty to Bath. And unfortunately, at this time, Reece Priestland isn't missing anything, is he? Is it 22 kicks in a row or something like that? Yeah, well, he's metronomic at the moment. And Gloucester ended up with another losing bonus point. But Snowy mentioned it earlier. I'll let you talk first, Snowy. It was a much more encouraging performance.
Yeah, I thought first half is the best half we've played in over a year, probably. Best part of 18 months. And considering we played nearly all of that a man down, it felt like, you know, I don't want to say that, as I mentioned earlier, quality still isn't really there, especially in attack. It's we are holding the ball, but we didn't really know how to break them down. And I thought Billy at 10 was very deep. So we weren't really creating any sort of opportunities past first phase. But what was way better is, I don't want to say it's heart, because heart doesn't really win you anything, but what was there, and we've probably had heart for the last few weeks, to be fair, it's just, you know, every player is putting their all into every game, but what was there was that there was a group combined organization that meant that in defense the line was coming up flat together. There was a lot of communication, a lot of talking, and when we got the ball, you could see that people were awake and were saying, right, what can we do with it? How are we going to attack? How are we going to hit this hole? How are we going to sort of get on top of the game? And I thought the attitude when we were a player down, certainly for the first half and good chunks of the second half, was, yeah, the best we've seen in a long time. And actually in attack, because we've said, even the games that were close the last few weeks, in attack, we basically haven't done anything that wasn't first phase. Against Bristol, we didn't have two phases in their half the entire game.
No.
But we had periods where we were holding the ball and we were making ground. And I was like, blimey, I haven't seen this in a long time. And, you know, ultimately it turned into tries as well, with the key try at the end. It was like a really good, long, prolonged period of possession where it's amazing what happens when you keep the ball, isn't it? You win penalties, and then off the back of the fact you've won penalties in the red zone, you can have a go and try and create something and try and get into the corner. And that's what every team does these days, because the way the laws are gone now, if you're within the 22 and you get a penalty, you basically have free whack at trying to score a try. And it is rare that the ball gets turned over from that point, because either you kick 3 points, or you get the ball back, you go to the corner, or you score a try off the advantage. And they're the chances you've got to generate. I'm in the red zone and I've got an advantage. That's like one on the board. And you want 8 or 9 of those in a game and you win the game. But yeah, I mean, other games where a lot of people have said we've played really well, I don't think we were good enough, and I don't think we did deserve anything from the game. But honestly, I can say again, in that game, we deserved more. I thought we were the better side. I thought the Harris penalty hasn't been talked about much other than by me, but I thought it was incredibly harsh. So I went back and watched it again. It's crossing, because the guy has run directly between Harris and the ball carrier. Harris has still got the ball carrier in front of him, and of course he's nailed the guy in between him. And I thought it was almost one of those that, like, knowing the situation of the game, the referee's just looking to blow his whistle there, isn't he? So that was really frustrating way to end. And I don't blame Harris for it. I don't think he could have done anything different. So I thought that was quite harsh. We did deserve more from the game.
I'll tell you what else was harsh. Was it Tian Showman, the number 22, that was making the two-up tackle? How he didn't get a red card as well, because he hit him.
Yeah.
They both hit the guy in the face, you know, Moyle, wasn't it? Yeah. Getting two shoulders to the face. And you think...
One on the chin, one on the nose, wasn't it?
It's never going to happen.
Well, to be fair,
the reality of the situation is it's never ever going to happen. But it should.
If anyone's going to be dishing out two red cards, it is going to be Barnsley, isn't it? You know, he's very confident with that sort of thing. And well, I'm just a bit surprised. I think we could have done with it. The fact that we were down to 14 for pretty much the whole game, I think having them down 13 for the last little bit might have been a nice way to...
Mind you, you have seen how we play against 13 players, though.
Yeah, we need a yellow card.
Technically, this is another game we lost from the other position.
We need Joseph, and Joseph gets his yellow card as well, so they go down to 12. That's what we need.
Yeah. I'll come on to a particular moment. So we talk about the game, and as Snow's right, it was a far more encouraging performance. Now, Loz mentioned... That's actually something that Snowy mentioned, sorry. And I was going to come to Loz about this. Snowy mentioned it a few weeks ago, or maybe a couple of months ago, about when we were in the red zone and we got an advantage, it was kind of wander pass our ass, wasn't it? It was throw the ball out as far as see or do a kick pass out to the wing. And there were a couple of occasions in that first half, and I think I might say that we in our group chat, we were mentioning this, that's what it needed. It needed a kick pass or a long loopy pass out wide. We've got a penalty in the 22. Why don't we go for it? Your thoughts, Loz, on that and just general on the game?
Firstly on that, yeah, it's also easier to see that when the cameras are up in the back of the stand and you're looking down on it from a wide, much further wide angle. Mm-hmm. And we don't have our mercurial fly half that we had at the time who's capable of throwing those passes either. Mm-hmm. It was a little bit frustrating from that point of view. What got us to the dance was keeping it tight, and then we kept it a little bit too tight at that, those stages. It was, it needed that call to go, and then I don't know. But then, as I think Snowy said, it was 12th trees was sitting too deep, really, as well for me. It needed that because he was so far back. It meant our backs were even further back to have any depth on it, and it needed someone up flatter to be able to throw that pass out over the top, because it gave the defenders too much space to be able to match up against our players, I felt. Whereas if you're deeper, you've got that opportunity to match up a little bit easier or float out. Whereas if it's flat, you've got two choices. You either step in or you step out. And yeah,
there's nothing wrong with being patient in that position. That's the thing, is that because worst case scenario, you get a penalty and you don't have to kick 3 points. There's nothing stopping you going to the corner. And that's always going to be a very productive position, isn't it? A five-metre line out, apart from if you're Gloucester and you can't throw into a line out for love nor.
Well, you say it's not a problem with being patient. There isn't, to an extent, as long as you don't drop the bloody ball.
Yeah, but you know, even then, you come back for the advantage. But if you take
someone, there is an advantage. But if you're playing without an advantage, yeah.
Yeah, the one that we scored.
So if you've got
prime example, that's what you need to do. Yeah. Really, we didn't throw a wonder pass to score that try with the advantage.
No, it was they were terrified of Rhys Samet, weren't they? They were standing off him because they were terrified of his pace. But ironically, giving him space was just about as worst as you can do.
Sponsored walk.
Yeah, a sponsored walk, as somebody said. Yeah. I wanted to come on to briefly about the Bath game actually, and Jim, I'll let you have your. To your pence here as well, was the forward passes. Now, yeah. I thought that Wayne Barnes had an excellent game, as always. The way he went through the process of going through the red cards, and even, you know, the Jonathan Joseph yellow card at the end was textbook. You know, it's really well done, because how many times do you see an infringement that when the team score, they don't go back and penalise the infringement? But I mean, some of those forward passes were horrendous, Jim.
Yes, they were. And much like Loz was saying, you know, the benefit of us looking down, we can see the options for the 10 much more easily than the 10 can. And the same goes for the referee, that we can see the cut of the grass, or, you know, the proxy, you know, it went from being a metre short of the halfway line to being a couple of inches short of the halfway line. Clearly that's a forward pass. So I think sometimes it is a lot easier as a viewer to see the forward pass, but of course the TMO is a viewer. So maybe they could help a little bit, and just because, I mean, if there's one thing that Wayne does like, it's a little bit of help, and it doesn't take a lot. So, oh, that pass was forward, Wayne. That's what it takes.
It's weird that, wasn't it?
Because he's quite happy for it.
Well, firstly, I mean, Wayne Barnes doesn't give forward passes. He never has. It's like every referee has their own little nuances, doesn't he? And he loves a forward pass.
Ask New Zealand, yeah.
But what I thought was really weird about the refereeing in that game is that, and it was mainly to our advantage, so I can't complain too much, was that the TMO gave nearly all the key... the TMO, the...
touch judge.
The touch judge.
Yeah,
Matt Carley, wasn't it?
Matt Carley, yeah. He gave loads
Barnes,
in that first
Barnes
half.
Wasn't giving anything, unless he was just very delayed in his response. Nearly all the key decisions were given by the touch judge, and it was a shit. He seemed to go quiet in the second half, which I wondered if Wayne had a bit of a word with him or something. Because the trouble is, he can't really. It's difficult, especially on telly, isn't it? If the touch judge is calling something, it's very hard to say no one's going to let it go.
Yeah.
So I wonder if he had just asked him to be a bit more quiet in the second half, but all of the key decisions came from the touch judge.
I think scrum time, Barnes is very, you know, when you watch Wayne Barnes, he is someone who involves the whole team. It's a team effort. And I think that's one of the reasons why he's such a good referee, because there, you know, there's not a lot that gets missed. I think that's the key bit.
Well, I think it's really important, isn't it, to understand that as a referee, you might be the most important official on the pitch, but that doesn't necessarily mean that you're the best for every decision at every moment. And there are other people that might have a better view or have seen something that you haven't. So to disregard stuff, you know, or I've seen some foul play, for example, I think that was a high tackle. And a lot of referees go, no, I saw that it's fine, play on. Whereas someone like Wayne would go, oh, okay, I thought it was okay. Do you think I need to have a look? And then it will go on the big screen and he'll look at it again with the benefit of all those camera angles. And, thank you very much, Mr. TMO or Mrs. TMO. Yes, that was actually a high tackle. I didn't think it was at the time, but now I do, and penalise it accordingly. And I think that's got to be applauded, because there's far too many people that are so afraid of making mistakes that they refuse to acknowledge the fact that they could possibly ever make one, whereas actually that's a bigger mistake in itself.
Yeah. It's funny you should mention that, because you mentioned the teamwork and them all working together, and Snowy mentioned about Matt Carley making all those decisions. Well, at the time, I made a comment in our WhatsApp group about how the fact that when with the VAR red card, he turned around and said, so we're all in agreement. And then sort of Carly sort of went, it was that sort of action rather than yes. It wasn't a definitive yes that the others gave. It was a,
Yeah. Of course, the ironic thing about the Val red card was if the player hadn't gone off the pitch, it wouldn't have been a red card because they wouldn't have looked at it. It's only because the player went off the pitch. They have to look at these things. He went off with a head injury.
I thought with TMO, if it's serious foul play, they can look at it
but I mean generally what tends to happen is that when the player leaves the field because of injury, they will look at it a bit more closely. I think if he'd just taken a knock and was fine,
because they turn around and said, you often hear is there any foul play there when someone's got a bang, and they turn around and say, no, it's just a rugby incident, whatever term you want to use. The one thing that Russ, who's not here, was saying as a mitigation on that, and look, I don't think he's right. I personally think it was a red card, letter of law and all that. Mm-hmm. And Russ was trying to argue a mitigation in our group chat about the fact that the defender was stood upright, and if he'd been in a proper tackling position, he wouldn't have got hit in the head. I'm not convinced by that as mitigation. I think that the officials actually got that right personally.
If it's his hand that hits him rather than his arm, is that then okay?
Yeah, yeah. If it's a fist,
I think it's deemed. Yeah, as long as it's open fist as well. It needs to be the flat of the fist rather than anywhere near any sort of wrist area either.
Yeah, if it's an open palm and it's a handoff, I mean, it's literally just a handoff, that's fine. It's because he used his arm and it was away from the body. Yeah. He kept it tight to the body.
So you're allowed to have it tight to the body, make the impact, push out. And then push out. Is saying if he had an open hand time, then that would have been okay. Because it would have been considered a handoff, even though his hand wasn't the bit that made contact; it was more of his forearm.
Yeah.
So that was a little bit. But if he had an open hand, it would have probably been a yellow rather than a red.
I don't even think it would have been a penalty, mate. I think it would have just been a play on. I genuinely don't even think it. There was an incident in France a few years ago where I think it was La Rochelle player got binned. And it was an absolute farce because it was just a handoff and the referee binned him. And it was the fact that the scrum half was about 5'2" and this guy was about 6'9" prop, massive bloke. And he went, he kind of almost jumped into the bloke and got pied off and the bloke got a yellow card for handing him off. But there we go. We're going to move on now.
I could have been a real weapon then because I'd have got so many players red carded.
Got to get near the players, though, mate.
Get tossed to one side like a rag doll. And say, oh, well, you're not allowed to do that, sir.
We laugh, but that's we'll start seeing that soon if we haven't already. Is starting to go into tackles when you see someone line you up, just get down as low as you can and create the red.
Yeah.
I'll tell you something now. I'm glad I don't play rugby anymore because I would literally get sent off every game I played. I'd come back from a ban and I'd be gone again. And it wouldn't be from violent conduct or anything like that. It would just be from leading the way you used to
Leading with his elbow illegally.
Led with the elbow, but you don't worry about what you're trying to do. You're just trying to force off a tackle here and there or whatever. Yeah. And also with the tackling as well. And I used to tackle and try and get man and ball. And if I come up against someone who was, as most players at local level were, smaller than me, the amount of people I would have caught in the head, and I'd be gone every time.
And that's the issue with the red cards now, in my opinion, is it's all very well to say that you're trying to create a new way of playing where you tackle low, but it's not just about tackling low. You almost have to not commit to any tackle now. You have to have half an eye on seeing how the body position plays out and then sort of grab them later or something to make sure it's safe, because you can go in a perfectly legitimate legal position, and in a split second, a position can change, or another player hits someone and he stood up and you've caught him in the wrong place. And by the letter of the law, it's now a red.
Yeah. Well, that sort of leads me on to in Australia, they're doing some slight law changes and stuff. And a red card means that you leave the field, and after 20 minutes, you can get replaced. So the team goes back up to 15.
Loss is disgust to this, by the way.
And I was reading up on it a few days ago, because apparently some guy got red carded and then got replaced. And I was just thinking, well, if that were to go down to the lower leagues, you just get your Mike Tyson type player. Yeah. He's going to go on, he's going to spark out the opposite 10 because he's a points machine.
Yeah.
Get red carded. You play your man down for 20 minutes and then, right, okay, we're back up to 15 and play on.
Which I'm going to assume there's going to be some sort of like protection against that, though. Surely, if you get sent off for violent conduct, you're not going to be allowed to overplace them.
You say violent conduct, but you know, it's Umaga was quite subtle with his violent conduct on O'Driscoll, wasn't he? On that line,
but he was that subtle. He didn't even get a bloody card.
Yeah,
the reason they have to do that though is because the red card isn't anymore for red card offences. So the whole idea of the red card is that you have gone beyond like the basic law, the scope of the laws of the game. You've gone beyond that and you need to be off for the rest of the match. So that's, you know, you've deliberately punched someone. You've deliberately
stamped someone, gouged somebody. Yeah.
It's not that you've got your technique a bit wrong and hit someone in the wrong place. And that's the trouble, is that line has been merged now.
Yeah, so it's shifted, isn't it?
Are you saying we need an orange card?
Yeah.
Well, that's so kind of what the Australians are doing, isn't it?
The red is still a red, and we can have something in between.
Yeah, well, yeah, I mean, this is the problem. Anyway, we're going to move on to the Worcester game now. So we've got Worcester coming up on Saturday. We're obviously going to be without Val Rapava-Ruskin. It sounds like Alamano is struggling still. He got a knock to the throat against Bristol, I think. So he's struggling with that, but and Ben Morgan apparently was sore after the Bristol game. They were the sort of the headlines of.
Well, of course he was sore. He was playing a Premiership game after not playing a Premiership game for God knows how long.
It's true. But anyway, it sounds like we've got a fairly strong side. Obviously, all our internationals aren't available this week. I'd like to say the same about Worcester, but I don't think they have any. So it's going to be a fairly strong Worcester side comparatively. You'd like to think that Gloucester, even the way we're playing at the moment, will still be able to beat Worcester. They're a poor side.
If we can't, then we absolutely deserve to finish bottom.
Yeah, I agree.
That is a really
if we show the intensity that and commitment that we showed against Bath, we should win comfortably. Really.
Mm. Yeah, I agree.
Especially if we can keep all 15 on the pitch. So.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, my personally. Thought is I think we will win. I thought we might sneak it against Bath, and we nearly did. I've got a feeling that we will win probably quite comfortably on Saturday. I don't know about you guys.
That's not the important thing. I would be more than happy with 3-0.
Oh yeah, yeah, just winning.
Oh, win, just any win. Well, actually, I wouldn't, because I don't feel as if, as was proved again on that Friday night, we can't hold on to a lead. So, I'd much rather us be about 20 points up going into the last 5 minutes. Thanks.
Yeah, Snowy, what do you reckon, mate?
I mean, we said Bath and Worcester are must wins. Bath, all right, we didn't win it, but I kind of feel like the performance did increase that much more. That I'll let them off just one time. But Worcester is all about the result. We need that same level of performance, and we've got to put them away. There's no question. Because if we find a way to lose that game, the run of fixtures after it, you can't see us getting anything out of them.
Is it Leicester home, Wasps, or Wasps away, Leicester home? I think they're the next two, aren't they?
Wasps aren't going so strong at the moment. Leicester, you've got to find, but at home, I know we were rubbish first game of the season. Leicester have been hit and miss, although against Wasps they did look quite good the, this weekend.
Yeah, against... I still think we could win those two.
I mean, Jim, right, I like to think that too, maybe based off the Bath performance, but we haven't won in like 3 months.
No. No, yeah, if we don't beat Worcester, we're not winning the other games, I don't think. But if we can beat Worcester, I think we could possibly go in with some momentum.
That would absolutely. I mean, yeah, what, 9 down, 1 up. That's momentum.
Worcester has to be the one to go for, because otherwise you have to say the only teams we're capable of beating are Championship or lower.
Mm. Well, the farcical nature of the league is that Worcester have got 3 wins this season, of which 2 of them are COVID wins.
Yeah.
So basically, so, I mean, they've won once like us.
Yeah,
like
basically. Us, yeah. And it's an absolute farce in that regard. But, I mean, I think that my feelings have been, last couple of weeks, Bristol, I mean, Snowy, you disagree with me on this one, and that's fair enough, but I thought the Bristol performance was a step up from the Irish performance. I thought, obviously, the Bath game was another step up. And I get the feeling that probably the team you want to be playing now is Worcester, because they are down there as well. They are a very poor side. They haven't played for a week.
But likewise, it's the other way around, isn't there? From Worcester, the one team you want to be playing, that historically, it doesn't even matter how well we've been going, because we've been going well in the past. If you're going through a bad trot, you wanted to play Gloucester, didn't you?
Mind you, they've got a pretty, I mean, I know again there's no crowd, but they have an appalling record at Worcester, Gloucester. I mean, they've won once, I think, ever at Gloucester. They have an absolutely appalling record there. But we'll see.
Bath are a poor side as well. We were better than them, and we were a man down for most of the game.
Yeah, I thought, I mean, we mentioned the quality of the game. I thought it was a very poor quality game. Bath were terrible, really. Sorry, Jim.
No, I was just going to say, you know, Worcester, in all the years they've been in the Premiership, they haven't won a huge amount of places. They haven't even won at Six Ways all that often.
apart from against us, normally.
Yeah,
they've got a pretty good success rate against us, but then that is an away game for Gloucester, of course. But yeah, I mean, Worcester have perennially been, you know, 10th or worse, haven't they? So, if we can't win that,
yeah, we deserve to be bottom. Let's be fair.
We deserve to be bottom, and very, very sad.
We're going to move on now just to the England-Wales game, and then we'll briefly touch on... we kind of covered a little bit about the stupid penalties and stupid red cards and stuff and idiotic play, but we'll come on to the England-Wales game, because that's the only game that really matters other than Gloucester-Worcester this weekend. Snowy and I both went to university in Wales, therefore we know lots of Welsh people, and therefore we will probably have to avoid social media for about the next month if England lose.
Well, to be fair, that's just to do with the proximity of Gloucester to Wales as well. We've got, Gloucester is full of Welsh, and my God, do they love to be Welsh when Wales have beaten England.
The thing is, Wales are rubbish at the minute as well. They've won their 2 games by default, yet you know in this game you don't go into it with any confidence.
England have been pretty horrendous as well. You know, we have the capability of being a fantastic side, yeah, and thanks to Eddie's selection, we are not.
I mean,
do you think it's selection with? Because I've seen the thing about any England side, right, is you always get the media say that they should be playing some young maverick from the Premiership, and it never works out that way. That they then end up having like a long sustained international career. So like for me, the players are mostly right. What's the issue is the fact that they're just playing in such like a siloed way. They're so like one directional.
The other the game plan side, but also the fact that half the team aren't playing very much at the moment. There's something like this. I saw something on Twitter whilst we were presenting this in the break.
Vunipola.
And it Vunipola saying, yeah, I haven't been playing, that's why I've been off form.
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, it is a farce. I mean, when you think that, and you've got people like Simmons and Don Brandt and Earl and all these other players that are there waiting to go, I do struggle. I can kind of understand when Cipriani wasn't getting picked by Eddie Jones. There was historical reasons there, and there were, let's be honest, there were sort of extra things outside of the game of rugby that Jones didn't really want to be around the camp.
He was right as well. Cipriani, if you look back in hindsight now, there wasn't a point in time where he should have been picked for England, I don't think. You look at the quality they did have in that same period.
Yeah, I mean, I think to be fair to him, so for example, the Cipriani situation with the World Cup, I thought he was, you look at the players we took at 10, and probably it was Piers Francis, wasn't it, was taken instead of Cipriani.
Yeah.
But what you right, get to if Cipriani isn't starting, so all you've got then is the bad bit of Cipriani, the fact he's around everybody else.
But then I know what you mean, but the argument being is that when you need something to change, you've got someone to come on and change it. That's the argument. I mean, it doesn't always work.
That only works if you start with both Ford and Farrell, because if Farrell starts at 10, Ford goes on the bench.
Yeah, well, this is the problem.
And then if you've got both Ford and Farrell in the team, there's a good chance you won't put Cipriani on the bench because of the fact that Farrell can move into 10 if anything happens. So you probably go for a different combination.
I inherently, the biggest issue I think at the moment with England is anytime Farrell is anywhere near 10 is where it all starts to go wrong. He's just not a 10. He just isn't a 10. He hasn't got the quickness of thought. He hasn't got the tackling ability at times. I think he's a wonderful player and he's a brilliant 12, but he's not a 10 in any way, shape or form.
Yeah, I mean, you say tackling ability, but he's probably the best defensive 10 in the world. He just has had some highlight moments where his tackles have been overly aggressive. But pure defence, he's a brick wall. And there aren't, and you look at other international 10s, probably 80% of other international 10s get hidden on the blind side, so they don't have to tackle.
No, fair enough. I'll revise my point. I agree with you there. But attacking wise, he just isn't up to it, I don't think, comparatively. I mean, when he makes Ford look like a world class 10 comparatively, I do think that shows you where the problem is. I don't understand why, if you're Eddie Jones, you aren't looking at someone like Marcus Smith. I can kind of, the Simmons thing I can get. I don't think necessarily Simmons is an international 10. I think he benefits from a very dominant pack and he's a decent player. I don't think he's an international 10.
He's a top quality club player. He's not an international
10. He's your Andy Goode, isn't he, basically? He's your new Andy Goode, but without...
He's your Peter Buxton when he was at Gloucester. You know, he's top quality club player, but not really that calibre of player to be an international.
Yeah.
The thing about Marcus Smith is that he's missed his opportunity to bring him in the games that would have suited playing him, getting a feel for how he fits into the team, what it looks like against like your Georgias or whoever, your Italy. He's missed those opportunities. You can't bring him in against a Wales or against Ireland. No.
I mean, he can't go in the squad at all, can he? Because he's not even part of the shadow squad. But the argument being, as you rightly say, he should have been brought in the autumn. He should have been picked from the start in the squad. And actually, I would actually argue that in the games against Italy and Georgia, there is no point in having a Marcus Smith there because he's going to look good no matter what. You're better off bringing him against, you know, when you've got France in the Autumn Nations Cup, or you've got a Scotland game or a Wales game or an Ireland game, and you go to Dublin or you go to Cardiff and you see what his metal's like. Because at the end of the day, the Six Nations, to a point, it doesn't really matter. I know it makes a big difference to us because we beat the Welsh, we beat the Scottish, etc., or the Irish. But actually, it doesn't really matter. There is no consequence if England lose a game, per se. It's all really a big warm-up each year. It gets bigger and bigger and bigger until the World Cup. That's generally what it's about.
I mean, if you look at Eddie Jones's selections over the years, he doesn't put young players in as sort of first choice in a position at all. He waits until they're really experienced. The prime example is Dan Robson at 9. I know we always talk about Dan Robson because he's one of my favourites, but how Dan Robson hasn't been the starting 9 for the last 2 or 3 years. So he's got that level of 80-minute games for England building up to the World Cup.
Yeah,
it's absolutely nuts.
Do we think, and we'll leave it here at this point, but do you think England are going to win at the weekend?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I do.
Well, it's in Cardiff, isn't it? But they're going to have
no fans.
There's no fans, and the roof's not going to be shut. Not that it makes a difference when there's no fans there anyway. But I think that's probably going to be the key. You haven't got the cauldron element. I'm sure they'll put all the noise up and all the flares and all the fire and stuff and make England wait and nonsense.
How many Welsh players would you switch out for their equivalent in the England team?
I'd have Rhys Summitt. Rhys Summitt instead of Watson, and then I probably have.
Watson's been good though, hasn't he? Last year games, to be fair. I've never been the biggest fan, but he does look like he's probably in all the backs. He's the one that can just create something for nothing at the minute.
Yeah, I think I'd have Liam Williams over what's his name, Daly. Personally,
really?
I think Liam Williams is a better player.
I'm not a big Daly fan, but
I think Liam Williams. I think Liam Williams is a dickhead, but I think he's a better player.
He's a bit of a Cipriani, isn't he? I wouldn't want him in the squad.
Probably not. And then maybe going in the forwards, probably.
I'd have the Welsh come out as well.
Yeah, and Faletau maybe in terms of form. I think above
at the moment.
Talked about all the time.
Yeah, but over Vunipola, that's what I'm saying at the moment.
Current form.
Current form.
You'd have to go with Faletau and Vunipola.
Not many of them, that's for sure.
No.
Anyway, let's hope for a double win, and much happy pod next week.
Yeah, proper happy pod. Wouldn't that be nice?